From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. On today's Fresh Air, Jimmy Dale Gilmore joins us with his guitarist to sing a few songs from his latest CD, Come On Back. It's a tribute to his late father and features some of his father's favorite country songs. Also, we listen back to an interview with the guitarist Link Wray, a pioneer of the power chord, fuzz tones, and distortion. His 1958 hit Rumble was used in Pulp Fiction. He died earlier this month at age 76. That's all coming up on Fresh Air.
I could buy a Sunday suit and it would leave me broke. If it had two pair of pants, I would burn the coat. No matter how I struggle and strive, I'll never get out of this world alive. If it was raining gold, I wouldn't stand a chance. I wouldn't have a pocket in my pants.
First, the news. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. We're getting in the mood for the holiday weekend with some great music performed in our studio by Jimmy Dale Gilmore. His voice would make even Hank Williams cry, wrote Nicholas Dawadoff in the New York Times Magazine. Gilmore is a singer from West Texas who writes songs that would be described as alternative country. But he sings country classics on his new CD, Come On Back, which is dedicated to his late father, who died 5 years ago of ALS. Come On Back features songs his father loved, including one by Jimmy Rogers, who Jimmy Dale Gilmore was named after. In addition to Gilmore's solo albums, he records with the band The Flatlanders, which includes fellow West Texas musicians Joe Ely and Butch Hancock. Jimmy Dale Gilmore has brought his guitar for today's show, and accompanying him on guitar is Robbie Durso, who also performs on the new CD. A little later, Gilmore's son Colin will join in with some vocal harmonies. Welcome, everyone, to Fresh Air. It's really a pleasure to have you here. Jimmy Dale Gilmore, this new CD is dedicated to your father, who died a few years ago. I want you to start with a song, Pick Me Up On Your Way Down. And what did this song mean to your dad?
Well, actually, it represents an entire style that I really associate with him. It's this old, it's honky-tonk dance music is what it amounts to. And it is one particular one that he really loved. I have this memory of him just, with his kind of head tossed back and with his eyes closed, just grinning when this kind of music was on.
Would you play it for us?
Yeah.
One, two. You were mine for just a while, now you're putting on the style, and you never once look back at your home across the track. You're the gossip of the town, but my heart can still be found where you tossed it on the ground. Pick me up on your way down. Pick me up on your way down. When you're blue and all alone, when their glamour starts to bore you, come on back where you belong. You may be their pride and joy, but they'll find another toy, and they'll take away your crown. Pick me up on your way down.
The way we fake being the band playing the song.
And that's Jimmy Dale Gilmore on guitar and singing Robbie Durso, who's singing harmonies and playing guitar. And that song is from Jimmy Dale Gilmore's new CD, Come On Back. That sounded really great. As we mentioned before, the CD is dedicated to your father, who died of Lou Gehrig's disease. Did he introduce you to country music?
Oh, yeah, for sure. He was from my very, very earliest memories, that music was always pervasive. You know, it was radio. We didn't have a phonograph until I was actually in high school.
Wow, that's pretty late.
And but my dad, we always had the radio going, you know, and my dad played. So he would be sitting around the house playing his guitar along with the radio, or actually, you know, sometimes playing that with the bands for dances.
And you quote a great advertisement for a dance that he was playing, where he apparently he was one of the first musicians in West Texas to use a solid body electric guitar.
That's right.
So would you describe that ad?
Yeah, it said at this time when I was very small, we lived in Tulia, Texas, from the time till I was about 5 years old, and on a dairy farm, and my mom recently, you know, a few years ago, found a little clipping from the Tulia Herald, little tiny ad that said dance at the VFW hall featuring with the Swingaroos featuring Brian Gilmore and his electric guitar.
That's great. The Swingaroos.
Such a novelty.
So did your father teach you guitar, or did you learn that on your own?
He taught me just a little bit. He taught me how to play Wildwood Flower, and the thing is that I fell in love with the acoustic guitar, and my dad was an electric player. Mm-hmm. And I never did. To my regret now, I never did really learn to play the electric well. I can fumble through with it. But I just learned, My dad taught me a tiny amount, and then I kind of went off into really more in the folk and blues direction as I was learning to play.
How did you start singing?
I can't remember when I didn't sing. That was just I even think in a way that I might have been, even though I thought about other things, I think I maybe was already predetermined to be a musician, because singing and music was so deeply important to me, and I think it came from my dad a lot.
I want you to do another song from your new CD, Come On Back, and the song I'm going to ask you to play is a Johnny Cash song called Train of Love. But tell us first how you first heard Johnny Cash and what he meant to you.
Well, I may have heard a few of his recordings on the radio a little bit. This is when I was very young. But my first real memory of it was my dad took my sister and I to see Johnny Cash with Elvis Presley. And I was about 12. I think she was about 10. And it was, I've often said that I suspect that that night completely determined the rest of my, I think that was one of those places where a little deflection happened, that I loved that music so much. I loved both of them. My sister has this memory, and I think her memory is better than mine, but she thinks that she remembers talking on the way home from the thing that night that she loved Elvis the most and that I loved Johnny Cash. The way I remembered is that I loved both of them so much that it was just the best music I'd ever heard in the world, and I already loved music.
Although you sing in a completely different range than Johnny Cash does, there's something about Johnny Cash that I hear in your voice.
I think he probably affected my way of understanding phrases something. I'm pretty sure he affected me so much from such an early time that I'm pretty sure it's not deliberate, but it's in there. It's for sure.
Boy, I wish I was at that concert. It must have been really early in their career, right after they both signed with Sun Records. Concert with Presley and Cash. Wow. Well, would you do that song for us, Train of Love?
Yeah, I will.
Train of love's a-coming, big black wheels a-humming, sweethearts waiting at the station, happy hearts a-grumming. Oh, train men, tell me maybe, ain't you got my baby? Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home. Train of love's a-leaving, leaving my heart. But early and late I sit and wait, because I'm still believing. Oh, we'll walk away together, though I might wait forever. Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home. Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home. Ever so often everybody's baby gets the urge to roam, but everybody's baby but mine's coming home.
That's singer and guitarist Jimmy Dale Gilmore, accompanied by guitarist Robbie Gerso, performing in our studio. That song is featured on Gilmore's new CD, Come On Back. They'll play more songs after a break. This is Fresh Air.
Mm-hmm.
Let's get back to our concert and interview with Jimmy Dale Gilmore, who's accompanied by guitarist Robbie Gerso. Jimmy, your father died of ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, in, what, 2000, was it? And you write in the liner notes how surprised you were at how quickly his body deteriorated once he was diagnosed. How close did you live to him at the time?
Well, we lived in Austin, which is pretty far away. It's a you know, it's a full day's trip. It's a, about almost 400 miles. And my mom and brother still lived, you know, in Lubbock with my dad. They were like 24-hour caregivers for him all that couple of years. And my sister also lived in Lubbock, although not she and her husband were a few blocks away. So they all got the brunt of it. You know, they got we drove down there as often as we could.
You're probably on the road a lot as the musician. You know, so many people are or recently have been or at some point in their life have been in that position of having to figure out how they can get to be with a loved one who lives far away but is very sick and dying. So how did you manage that with your, you know, performance schedule and your pre-existing contracts and being on the road? How did you figure out how to spend the time that you wanted to with your father?
At the very time he died, I did happen to be in Lubbock at the time, and we I ended up canceling, you know, a series of shows that were right around that period, and then actually I didn't work very much for a while there. In fact, I didn't do another record of my own until this one, but we spent a lot of time driving. We went to Lubbock as much as we could, and it became a grueling thing. And none of us had any experience with ALS. We didn't realize what, nobody does until it hits something like that, something so demanding of so much attention and time, and the hospice people. I have to say over and over, we can never be grateful enough to those people for what they did for us.
How did your father handle it toward the end and handle the loss of bodily functions and physical control?
Well, it was amazing. He, of course, there were moments when you could tell that he just, you know, was despairing. But most of the time, I mean, 99% of the time, he didn't really change. He still had this really wonderful sense of humor, and a lot of times I could tell that it would be like his spirits were higher than everybody around him.
I'm going to ask you another song. The song is Peace in the Valley. What did this song mean to your father? All the songs on your new CD are songs he loved.
Well, there was a funny story behind this one, because this isn't the type of music that I really associate with my dad. You know, he loved honky tonk music, and you know, just dance music, and he was a very, very spiritual person. But as far as the music went, he wasn't particularly interested in gospel or any of that music. But at the very last, there came this point one day when my daughter Elise, who spent a lot of time with my dad in the very last, she said, she asked him one day, "Granddaddy, what is your favorite song?" Because everybody knows, you know, it's part of the thing around him that music is his main interest, and she said that she thought he was going to say something like, you know, "Walking the Floor," one of those, or a Marty Robbins song or something, and. But she said he just kind of got real quiet, and he said, "Let me think about that a little bit," which surprised her. And then later on, I think later the same afternoon, he told her. Now, bear in mind, all this he's in bed, completely paralyzed. So, you know, she'd probably gone about and done something of the day, and then she went back and would just be with him, just sit with him, sometimes for hours on end. All of us would do that. But he said, "I've been thinking about it," and he said, and she said he said this with a kind of a little, like a grin, a kind of a twinkle in his eye, and he said, "I guess now my favorite song is probably Peace in the Valley." So there was a little touch of my dad's humor there. She really couldn't tell if he was kidding her or not. But the song itself, when I decided to try it, I think Joe Ely suggested it after hearing that story. You know, I thought, well, I can't do that. I don't know how to sing that music. And when I did it, I think Elvis Presley had done a very beautiful version of it, and I think it was back there in my subconscious someplace.
Well, whether your father was kidding or not, I'm awfully glad you did this song on the CD, and I'm going to ask you to perform it for us. To perform it for us now. I love the way you do it.
I'll try it.
And so this is Jimmy Dale Gilmore singing and on guitar. And Robbie Gerso is accompanying him on guitar, and he's also featured on Jimmy Dale Gilmore's new CD, Come On Back.
Well, I'm tired and so weary, but I must go along till the Lord comes and calls me away. Where the morning's so bright, and the Lamb is the light, and the night is as fair as the day. There will be peace in the valley for me someday. There will be peace in the valley for me. Oh, I pray there'll be no sorrow, no sadness, no trouble I'll see. There will be peace in the valley for me. Well, the bear will be gentle, and the wolf will be tame, and the lion will lay down by the lamb, and the beast from the wild will be led by a little child, and I'll be changed from this creature that I am. There will be peace in the valley for me someday. There will be peace in the valley for me. Oh, Lord, I pray there'll be no sorrow, no sadness, no trouble I'll see. There will be peace in the valley for me.
That was beautiful. That was really beautiful. And let me just say, that was Jimmy Dale Gilmore singing and Robbie Gerso accompanying him. And they were performing in our studio, but that song is also featured on Jimmy Dale Gilmore's new CD, which is called Come On Back. And it's songs all dedicated to his father, who died in 2000 of Lou Gehrig's disease. Now, Jimmy, you were saying that you didn't think of yourself as singing those kinds of songs, you know, gospel songs, spirituals. And that song is written by Thomas A. Dorsey. But hearing how you handle it, it's really gorgeous. Is it leading you maybe to consider adding more songs like that to your repertoire?
Well, I don't know. It's such an interesting thing, the process by which songs come into me, you know, whether they're my songs or somebody else's. It's always been mysterious to me. I don't really know what it is that means that a song is going to, there are a lot of songs that I truly love that I can't really sing, that I've even tried, you know, and I just, it's still part of the mystery of music. Music is so very strange to me, even now, you know. I've been doing it for so long and been around it so much, it would seem like you get jaded and kind of, but it's not that way. There's something about music that just remains. You just don't know. Why does any song have such a deep emotional impact as they can. That's very so like on that song, I never would have, you know, gone down and listened and say, you know, I think I'll record this song. It came from such a different direction. So I don't really know.
Our concert and interview with Jimmy Dale Gilmore will continue in the second half of the show. His new CD is called Come On Back. He's going to sing another song to end this part of the show, an original called Another Colorado. Joining him to sing harmony is his son, Colin Gilmore. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Down by the banks of the Colorado, my true love and I one night did lie. And we laughed and played and made fun of the entire world spinning round the sun down by the banks of the Colorado. Up from the banks of the Colorado, night watchmen stood guard round the wagon yard. And I took a pillar for a sign that the salt of the earth was surely mine. Up from the banks of the Colorado, there is another Colorado. Wise men have told me, wise women too, that I may find sweet El Dorado.
Major funding for Fresh Air comes from Barnes & Noble, publishers of Anthony Trollope's satire of money madness, The Way We Live Now, in the Barnes & Noble Classic Series, in stores and online. Additional support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Audible.com, where you can download and listen to NPR programs like Fresh Air, in addition to audiobooks, magazines, and newspapers. Audible.com/freshair. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Coming up, we listen back to an interview with the guitarist Link Wray, who had the 1958 hit Rumble. He died earlier this month. And we continue our concert with Jimmy Dale Gilmore.
Sweet, sweet, sweet love, I want you to be as happy as I when you love me. I'll never forget you, your sweet memory. It's all over now, don't worry about me. When one heart tells, one heart goodbye, one heart is free, one heart must cry. Oh, 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 sweet, sweet baby.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with more of our concert and interview with Jimmy Dale Gilmore. He's a singer and songwriter whose music is usually described as alternative country, but he sings country classics on his latest CD, Come On Back, which is dedicated to his late father and features some of his father's favorite country songs. You've lived in Texas all your life?
Well, there was one period that I lived in Colorado for part of the 60s.
Right,
right. The 70s.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But you grew up in small Texas towns?
I grew up basically in Lubbock. My dad, in fact, started college the same year that I started the first grade. And he went to Texas Tech. It was in Lubbock.
Oh.
So we moved to Lubbock when I was six, I guess. And so I went through all my school years in Lubbock. And then I went to Austin for a while. And then to Denver for a while. And I roamed around a lot during several of those periods. I was just a vagabond.
What did it mean to you to have like Buddy Holly coming out of Lubbock, where you lived? And who else came from there? What other musicians?
Oh, there was a ton of them. There's Waylon Jennings. And you know, I found out recently that Lefty Frizzell actually lived there in Lubbock for a while, uh-huh. and just before he became well-known. And from that area, there's just an incredible, not necessarily in Lubbock, but maybe, you know, the few counties around there. Roy Orbison, Bob Wills was from pretty close by.
Did that help you think that you could make it as a musician since other musicians from your part of the world had?
I think so. I think Buddy Holly, I think he opened up the musical floodgates for a lot of West Texas kids.
Do you ever play Buddy Holly songs?
Yeah, I do.
Oh, you do a Fruit Bars of one, would you? Would you do that?
You want to try? Yeah, let's do that. Yeah, we can. Now, once again, this is since it's a band song, you know. So this will be a artist representation.
Right.
Okay. We haven't done it in a long time, but I mean.
Wait. Let me just say before you start that I see that Jimmy Dale's son, Colin Gilmore, has just positioned himself at the microphone. We were saving Colin for the end where he's going to sing a duet with Jimmy, but great to have you at the mic. So we're going to have Jimmy Dale Gilmore singing and on guitar, and Robbie Gerso on guitar. Are you going to be singing harmonies too?
I'm going to try, yeah.
Okay, and also Colin Gilmore on harmonies. Here we go.
Okay, and it starts with stops.
Yes. We keep stopping and staring.
All right, here we go. All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The world can see that you were meant for me. All of my life, I've been a-waiting, tonight there'll be no hesitating, oh boy,
oh boy,
when you're with me, oh boy,
oh boy,
the world can see that you were meant for me. Well, the stars appear and the shadows are falling, you can hear my heart a-call, a little bit of loving makes everything right, and I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my life, I've been a-waiting, tonight there'll be no hesitating, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The world can see that you were meant for me. Play it, Robbie. My heart a call, a little bit of loving makes everything right, and I'm gonna see my baby tonight. All of my love, all of my kissing, you don't know what you've been missing, oh boy.
Oh boy.
When you're with me, oh boy.
Oh boy.
The world can see that you were meant for me. That you were meant for me.
Fantastic. I'm so glad you did that. And that's Buddy Holly's Old Boy, sung by Jimmy Dale Gilmore, who's playing guitar, accompanied on guitar, and backups by Robbie Gerso, also singing backups. Jimmy Dale Gilmore's son, Colin Gilmore, who'll be back with us again a little bit later. That was terrific. Do you do that in performances?
We haven't in a while, but there's several things like that that are sort of perennials, I think. But lately, since we've been doing such a country thing, that hasn't been on the list.
Well, Jimmy, you actually met Buddy Holly's father. How did you meet him, and what happened?
Well, this was in the mid-60s, like 64 or 65, and I met an English journalist who had come to Lubbock as almost like a pilgrimage to Buddy Holly's hometown. And at the time, Buddy was a little bit almost forgotten around there. It was strange, not amongst the musicians, but you know, he'd been gone for a while, and of course wasn't, you know, on the radio anymore. And he somehow met the Holly family, and then introduced me to them, and Mr. Holly, we got to be friends, and he offered to pay for me to make a demo of my songs. And at that point, I'd only been a solo performer, and so for the purposes of doing this, I put together the first band I ever performed with. And it ended up, it was Joe Ely and T.J. McFarlane, he was our drummer friend who just passed away recently, and Jesse Taylor and John Reed, and actually Al Straley, who's a really great songwriter friend of ours, did a little bit of piano on this. And my very first recording session was with the very first band I ever had. We called it the T. Nickel House Band because we hung out at Tommy Nichols' house. His name and his nickname was T. Nickel. And it didn't have to do with drugs or anything. Everybody thought that that's what the T. Nickel stood for. but so in another indirect way, Buddy Holly had another huge influence on my musical career.
That's really a great story. So what is it about Texas that they're really... that it's really bred so many great musicians, and you've been part, you know, of such an interesting Texas music scene. I mean, just like the Flatlanders alone is such an interesting group of people, you know, and that's a group you've played with for like 30 years or so.
Yeah, more than 30 years now.
It must be good for you to have a sense that you have a music community. Like you not only play solo, but you have. You have this kind of community of musicians who you play with, you know, you've played with over the years so much.
Yeah, it's been actually one of the most important things of my whole life, I think. And, you know, there's another interesting thing that just reminded me of. For the last about 10 years, I've been teaching a songwriting class at the Omega Institute, and then also sometimes out at Esalen on the West Coast. And then there's a new one in Austin called The Crossings. And... what I finally discovered, maybe about the third year into it, I kind of realized, well, what I was doing was I was sort of setting up the same sort of situation that I had with my friends. It's like get some musicians together, sit around and mess with some ideas and then talk about it. That's what we always did. You know, that's the way my classes work. And it's really based on this great, fabulous good fortune that I fell into very young in Lubbock.
Jimmy, when you write a song, do you work on it a lot? Does it come to you, or do you spend a lot of time crafting and reworking it?
Yeah, most of the songs I've written, I've always been slow at it, and there's a couple of exceptions, songs that just came really instantaneously, but most of my songs have been like I would come up with maybe a phrase or a verse, and then maybe have it in a little notebook, you know, in my pocket or something for years. In some cases, that I don't know how to put it exactly. I don't really work. I don't sit down and work. I just sort of let it happen, and it's usually pretty slowly for doing. I think I never really learned a real work ethic. I don't think. Songwriting.
My guest is singer and songwriter Jimmy Dale Gilmore. Gilmore's new CD is called Come On Back. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to our concert and interview with Jimmy Dale Gilmore, who's accompanied today by guitarist Robbie Gerso. I'm going to ask you to play a song that I really love, and I know it through you, through a tribute record to Billy Joe Shaver. And Billy Joe Shaver is a Texas songwriter and singer, and you know him, you're a friend of his,
uh-huh.
and you participated in a tribute concert that ended up on a tribute CD, and when Billie Joe Shaver was on our show, we played your version of this song. The song is called Hearts of Boston, and Billie Joe Shaver wrote it for his wife. Although it's a song about a wife's death, she was still alive when he wrote it, and I think, as I recall, he didn't even tell her about the song.
Yeah, he said he never got around to playing it for her.
So what do you think we should know about the song in order to fully get it?
Okay, it's first of all, it's Hearts of Boston is a flower, is a type of flower, and then his wife Brenda, Billy Joe's wife Brenda, would these flowers bloom apparently only at one time during the year. I guess it's just on a certain day, and somehow also there's a tribe of Indians that would return to an annual meeting ground, I guess, there. And he said his wife would always know when that was, and they would go there. And I don't know if they met with the Indians or what. That's part of it's almost like a dreamlike kind of image in the song. And it just, to me, the song itself just somehow evokes a feeling out of Billy Joe that it kind of epitomizes how I feel about him. He's just so sweet and wonderful and kind of strong at the same time. You know, he's got that kind of that West Texas macho thing along with a soft heart.
So, Jimmy, before you play Hearts of Boston, I want to mention that your son, Colin Gilmore, is going to accompany you on guitar and vocal harmonies on this one. And he's been performing with you on tour and opening for you as well.
That's right. Okay. He did. He opens the show and then does about half of the set with Rob and I.
Okay.
Hearts of Boston grew down by the river that flows by the old paper mill. In the springtime we stood there together at the top of the old stone fort hill. Many's the time I've been lonesome since you left. I don't know what to do. Like a flower that grows on the hillside, my heart's a-bustin' for you. Heart's a-bustin' is a beautiful flower that looks like its heart's burst inside. I miss you so much, your sweet, gentle touch. I'll love you till the day that I die. One day in a year when the time's right, the Indians flow round the bend. I don't know when I'll go, but somehow I know someday I'll be with you again. Hearts of Boston grew down by the river that flows by the old paper mill. In the springtime, we stood there together at the top of the old stone fort hill.
That was beautiful. A song by Billy Joe Shaver, played for us in the studio by Jimmy Dale Gilmore, who was singing and playing guitar with backup guitar and harmonies by his son, Colin Gilmore. Well, I want to thank you so much for performing for us today and for talking with us. My guest has been Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and he has a new CD called Come On Back that features a lot of great country songs, some real classics on it, and these are songs dedicated to his father because these are songs his father loved. Of course, Jimmy Dale Gilmore loves them too. And the album's called Come On Back. Featured on guitar on this album is Robbie Durso, who was also playing guitar for us earlier on the show and singing backup vocals. And Jimmy Dale's son, Colin Gilmore, has also been with us singing backup vocals. And he's also been on the road, on the tour with Jimmy Dale Gilmore. Thanks to all of you for performing for us and for being with us. It's really been great. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Terry. And I also want to tell you how very much I appreciate Fresh Air. I listen to it every day if I can.
Our concert with Jimmy Dale Gilmore was produced by Amy Sallet with Sam Brigger and engineered by Julian Hertzfeld. Coming up, we listen back to an interview with guitarist Link Wray and we play his 1958 hit, Rumble. He died earlier this month. This is Fresh Air. We're going to listen back to an interview with Link Wray. The great rock and roll guitarist died earlier this month at the age of 76. Wray was the forerunner of rock's guitar heroes. His 1958 instrumental hit, Rumble, suggested something new, a raunchy, distorted guitar sound that could carry a band. Wray has also been described as the father of the power chord. Wray had other hit records besides Rumble, including Rawhide, but he left his American recording career in the 60s. He moved to Denmark with his wife and son. His records have been used on several soundtracks, perhaps most effectively by Quentin Tarantino in Pulp Fiction. I spoke with Link Wray in 1997. He had just wrapped up a rare American tour, and his CD Shadow Man had recently been released in England. Let's start with his record Rumble. Rumble was named by the producer of the record, whose daughter said the sound reminded her of West Side Story. The record was banned in Boston because the title was too suggestive of gang fights. I asked Link Wray if he had gang fights in mind when he recorded it.
No, not really, because, I mean, I've always wore the shades, but that's just a Southern thing. I mean, Elvis and Jerry Lee Lewis, they all wear leather jackets and had long hair and wore shades. It's just a Southern thing that we did. You know, and but I was playing like Western swing music, if you will, you know, like Bob Wills Western swing. I always had the heavy beat because my brother Doug, you know, who played on Rumble and all my early hits, he was a real loud drummer. You know, Frankie Avalon's manager said that's the best drummer and loudest drummer I've ever heard in my life. You know, so Doug was a great drummer. You know, and even when we was playing our Western swing music, you know, I guess we were playing early rock and roll in the 40s. I played live on Sheriff Tex Davis's show, the guy who wrote Bebopalula for Gene Vincent in the late 40s. I did live music on his show in Norfolk, Virginia, and we were playing that really heavy music on his country show, you know.
Now, Rumble has incredible distortion on it. And this was in the really early days of guitar rock. Why did you want that sound?
All right, in the night of Fredericksburg, Virginia, 1957, this year a disc jockey named Milt Grant, he had a local TV show in Washington, D.C., and he was and the stars would come and play on his show, you know, and he had like a dance show, you know, where the kids would dance, and then he'd bring them to the record hop that night. All right, that night, 1957, he had the Diamonds on his show, which had the number one song in Billboard called "Strolling." All right, he brought them to the record hop that night. Jumped up on the stage, said, "Link, play me a stroll." I said, "I don't know a stroll," and my brother Doug. So, well, I know the beat of the stroll, and he was playing drum, you know, bah, da, 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 boom, bah, bom, 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 you know, and so my God, zaps rumble in my head, and I went, bom, 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 da, 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 you know, and my brother Ray takes the singing microphone and sticks it to the my amplifier, and the little small speakers from the singing amplifier starts rattling because I'm playing so loud. You know, and the kids started screaming, coming up to the stage, hollering, "We want that song," and they were screaming over me. And they didn't care about the Diamonds anymore. They was really going wild over this year, wild song I was doing, you know, wild instrumental I was doing. And I played it about four times for them before I left. And so Milt Grant, he smelt a dollar. You know, he could smell that was money there, you know. So him and my brother Ray got me into a studio. And when we started playing Rumble, you know, it was too clean. I couldn't get that sound I did in Fredericksburg at the show that night in Fredericksburg, Virginia. So I took a pencil and I started punching holes in the speakers, you know, of my both tweeters, not the big speaker. And so that was the first time that distortion was born, you know, because I didn't have boxes like Jimi Hendrix did when he came out, you know, 1968.
Now let me play the second hit that you had,
okay,
which is Rawhide.
Okay.
And tell me about making this record.
Rawhide, I was I did Rumble, and it went up the charts and left. Then Milt Grant wanted to put me on a bigger label. So he took me away from Archie Blyer's Cadence, put me on Epic Records, and I made Rawhide was my second hit. Came out. Dick Clark was playing it every day, even rated it on his show, best rating on his show, and it 98 with a bullet in the charts.
Ray's second hit, Rawhide. Now Duane Eddy, another one of the fathers of the guitar band, started recording in between your first two hits. What was his impact on you and your impact on him?
Well, no, when Rumble came out, he was on the Milt Grant show, the guy that I got started out with, you know, when I was doing all these record hops. And he said, "Link, I just put out a brand new song called Rebel Rouser." He said, "I hope it sells half as much as Rumble did." I said, "Well, why shouldn't it, man?" I said, "You're the twang guitar." I said, "My music is just as teenage gang fights. Yours is a twanger. You're the twanger, you know." he did most of his recordings, and his guitar work was on one string. You know, where I was going, blah, 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 you know, real wild, wild sound, you know. So we had two different sounds there, you know. And both of us had hit records in the 50s.
You stopped recording after several years. You just gave up commercial recording. Why did you give it up?
After Jack the Ripper came out, just before the Beatles, you know, Jack Nitzsche recorded Rumble with this big band sound, the guy who had Lonely Surfer, you know, and he had Rumble in the charts when President Kennedy got shot. And when he got shot, then my type of music, the Elvis music, and all that early music died with President Kennedy. And then morning music, you know, because they were mourning over the president. And then when the music started back up again, it was FM radio, albums. And then here come the Beatles from England, you know, on the Ed Sullivan Show on Capitol Records doing I Want to Hold Your Hand. You know, and it was a different type of music. And they also introduced to the audience LSD and all the drugs. I don't mess with drugs. You know, it's killed a lot of colleagues like Jimi Hendrix and a lot of people, you know. And so I'm very spiritual. I don't mess around with drugs. So I didn't want to play to the LSD crowd. So I retreated down to a little place in Maryland called the Two Thieves Club, playing to the rednecks where they were getting drunk off beer and whiskey, and I was doing CCR and Elvis while the rest of the world was playing, you know, acid music, you know.
So you didn't mind people getting loaded, you just didn't want them getting high on LSD?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I just don't go with the drug stuff, you know.
Okay.
You know, I drink two more beer, and I drink Heineken on stage, you know. And, you know, I can, like I say, I'm wild, but I'm not evil. You know, I think LSD and all that drug stuff is Satan's candy, you know?
You have a new record now called Shadow Man. Do you think your playing or your approach to the guitar has changed a lot since the 50s?
Well, I'm playing through a Boss Dynacom now, and I'm also playing through a little echo unit, you know, that I didn't have in the 50s, you know. And I'm playing through a 100-watt, 200-watt Marshall amplifier. I'm also playing through Fender Twins, which is very, very strong. Back in the old days, my old premium amplifiers and those little Sears and Roebuck amplifiers, what, 30 watts, 40 watts, you know. they weren't very strong. I had to have a whole bunch of them just to get 50 watts out of them, you know. And so I'm playing louder music while screaming rock and roll, you know, Link Ray music, you know, and the kids go, wow, dude. I mean, you know, it's just a bunch of noise, you know.
Link Ray, I thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you very much.
Link Ray recorded in 1997. He died November 5th at the age of 76. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. I'm Terry Gross.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From The Dial Press, publisher of Women's Letters, America from the Revolutionary War to the Present, edited by Lisa Grunwald and Stephen J. Adler. And from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On our Thanksgiving edition of Fresh Air, we'll listen back to interviews with Johnny Cash and June Carter Cash. Their lives are being dramatized in the new film Walk the Line. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
Tell that engineer to slow it down, or better still, just stop the train, because I want to look around. Hey, porter, what time did you say? How much longer?